GW Micro has released two beta versions of WindowWise 4.5 in the last week. Beta 1 was released last Thursday, but around 24 hours later, enough data had been collected from the new error reporting feature built into WindowWise to release a second. 4.5 boasts all the features promised by Doug Joffrey in his earlier main menu interview, including significantly enhanced support for interacting with HTML elements. WindowWise has also become the first screen reader to support Citrix MetaFrame XP, Microsoft Terminal Services, and Microsoft Remote Desktop. Anti-spam sentiment on Capitol Hill spiked on Thursday with one bill voted out of committee and another proposal introduced that would set lengthy prison terms for senders of junk mail. By a voice vote, the Senate Commerce Committee approved the CAN-SPAM Act, which would let federal regulators and internet service providers sue spammers who use forged email headers, who don't let recipients unsubscribe, or who send bulk messages to email addresses obtained through crawling the web. Also on Thursday, Senator Orrin Hatch, Republican of Utah, and Patrick Leahy, Democrat of Vermont, introduced the Criminal Spam Act, CSA, which would punish repeat spammers with up to 5 years in federal prison and fines of up to $25,000 a day. These proposals mark Washington's growing determination to enact anti-spam laws in the near future. The CSA joins a crowded field of at least 8 other proposals, each taking a different approach to the growing problem of unsolicited bulk email that has driven many people and email providers to distraction. While many states have enacted laws restricting unsolicited commercial email, the U.S. Congress never has. CSA targets fraudulent and deceptive spam by enhancing the ability of federal law enforcement authorities to prosecute and punish the most egregious wrongdoers, Hatch said in a floor statement. In a separate statement, Leahy added, the purpose of the CSA is to deter the most pernicious and unscrupulous types of spammers, those who use trickery and deception to induce others to relay and view their messages. Ridding America's inboxes of deceptively delivered spam will significantly advance our fight against junk email. For its part, CAN-SPAM would jail spammers who access an internet-connected computer without authorization and use it to send multiple commercial email messages. A first offence would be punishable by up to 3 years in prison, and repeat offenders or people who are committing other crimes in the process could be punished by prison terms of up to 5 years. And still with the Senate, Senator Orrin Hatch on Wednesday backtracked slightly from his suggestion a day earlier that copyright holders should be allowed to remotely destroy the computers of music pirates. In a brief press release, Hatch, chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, said that he suggested the idea at Tuesday's hearing. I think that industry is not doing enough to help us find effective ways to stop people from using computers to steal copyrighted personal or sensitive materials, he said. But Hatch noted that his proposed law, which would permit wide-scale destruction of computers used to download illicit music and other files from peer-to-peer networks, was still on the table. I do not favor extreme remedies unless no moderate remedies can be found, Hatch said in a statement. Because Hatch oversees the Senate committee responsible for writing criminal laws, and because he's taken a personal interest in copyright legislation, he is himself an amateur songwriter, his suggestion raised eyebrows and some alarm in Washington. It represents the most radical proposal to date in Congress, going even further than a bill introduced last year by Representative Howard Berman, Democrat of California, that would have permitted copyright holders to disable or block a P2P node that they suspected of distributing their intellectual property without permission. During a hearing that Hatch convened on Tuesday on the national security risks of P2P networks, he asked the witness, "Can you destroy their set in their home?" referring to a home PC. Randy Saf of Media Defender, a secretive Los Angeles company that works with the recording industry to disrupt P2P networks, replied by saying, "Nobody is interested in that approach." "I am," Hatch said. "I'm interested in doing that. That may be the only way you can teach someone about copyright. That would be the ultimate way of making sure no more copyright is infringed." Hatch suggested that Congress would have to amend laws restricting computer intrusions. If it's the only way you can do it, Hatch said, then I'm all for destroying the machines. But you'd have to pass legislation permitting that, it seems to me, before someone could really do it with any degree of assurance that they're doing something that might be proper. Oren Kerr, a former Justice Department prosecutor, who is an associate professor at George Washington University Law School, says Hatch's idea would not only be a bad idea, but an extremely bad idea. The cure would be worse than the disease, he said. If Hatch's proposal were to be written into law, Kerr said, it would have to amend the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, a federal computer crime statute. It would give an exception to copyright owners who were taking reasonable steps to disable acts of copyright infringement, Kerr said. The trick is that all of these disruption or disabling offences are crimes under the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act. Verizon Communications plans early next year to offer selected customers a hybrid telephone that would work as a cordless phone unit at home and a cell phone outside, a combination expected to grow increasingly popular in coming years as technology costs drop. The cordless cellular OneFone, manufactured by Swedish telecommunications giant Ericsson, will be offered to customers of Verizon Avenue, the New York phone giant's unit that offers service to apartments and condominium complexes. The cost of the phone and service has not yet been set. The OneFone unit will use a base station that connects to a conventional Verizon landline at home. When the phone is being used within range of a base station up to several hundred feet, it works like a normal cordless phone. Once outside the range of the base station, however, it would revert to Verizon Wireless's coverage. The same phone number would ring the phone in either cordless or cellular mode. Verizon spokeswoman Bobby Henson said the company will gauge Avenue consumer response before deciding whether to expand it to its 57 million home and business lines in 29 states. It's already testing the service in Chicago, Henson said. British Telecom announced a similar service in May of 1999, but it was shut down within the year without a public explanation. Microsoft, in the last week, began using a prototype program that indexes web pages on the Internet to help develop a future search program, MSN Group Product Manager Lisa Gurry said in an interview. MSN is seeking ways to fuel sales amid a decline in paying subscribers for basic Internet access as customers switch from MSN's traditional dial-up service to faster Internet connections sold by competitors. At the same time, MSN is trying to cut costs in order to turn a profit after almost 8 years in the market. MSN currently relies on Inktomi Corporation and LookSmart Limited to power its MSN search. Overture Services Incorporated provides MSN with paid search services, which lets businesses bid for prominent placement in search results. Microsoft has no plans to develop paid search technologies, Gurry said. It will confine its work to the arena that Inktomi, which was acquired by Microsoft competitor Yahoo Incorporated, and LookSmart work on. Gurry said Microsoft has no plans to end agreements with those companies. However, it does think it can make additional improvements to its search services, adding a technology that they're developing. Gurry declined to say how much Microsoft is spending on the effort. Search is one of the top priorities for MSN, she said, and the company is hiring to boost its efforts. She declined to comment on current headcount or hiring plans. MSN in the last week began using an MSN bot, an automated program designed to scan and index the web, Gurry said. She declined to comment on when Microsoft will change its search programs to use its own products. And finally we go to Britain and our horror file. Di Alexander was baffled when a £500 item appeared on his latest BT telephone bill. According to the account, he's dialed the speaking clock every 9 minutes of every hour throughout last December and from January to March. The calls, each amounting to 32 seconds, have sent his bill sky high and left Mr. Alexander dumbstruck. He was told by BT that the problem relates to his Sky digital box. An angry Mr. Alexander contacted his MP, David Stewart, who's taking the complaint to BT, Sky and Highland Council's Trading Standard offices. Mr. Alexander says that when he took up the problem with BT, the telecoms giant claimed that the calls were linked to a fault with settings on his Digibox. The box is programmed to call back from a modem at regular intervals to convey information for billing purposes and details of any non-subscription events. But Sky told Mr. Alexander there could be only a problem if the phone had been unplugged or a prefix is entered into the telephone settings. And he says the only time he touched the Digibox was when the broadcaster sent a new satellite viewing card. BT is adamant that the calls have to be paid for, but has suspended payment until July. Sky says it's unable to consider paying any of the balance on his bill. But the bemused customer asks, how on earth could I or any other human being be intent upon or capable of such an unrelenting, repetitive and precise and continuous pattern of usage? And why on earth would anyone want to dial the speaking clock more than once in a blue moon anyway? MP Mr. Stewart said, from research I've carried out, Mr. Alexander isn't the only one to be caught out with this problem, and there have been similar complaints to the BBC's Watchdog programme. As yet, Mr. Alexander hasn't been offered any help from Sky to pay his bill, but I believe they have helped in one other case of a similar complaint, he said. The MP added, they should do the decent thing and come to a settlement, and I will be pursuing the matter. A BT spokesman said, we've carried out a very full investigation into a number of complaints of this type and have found no fault with any BT equipment. There does appear to be a problem with some Sky Digiboxes connected to the BT network automatically dialing numbers, and this is a matter for Sky. He added, we have dealt with a number of similar cases, and in every one, when we have asked our customers to disconnect their Sky Digibox from the telephone line, the calls to 123 have ceased immediately. BT has a legal obligation to charge for the cost of connecting calls made on its network, and the charges have been maintained. It's a matter for Sky to resolve, he concluded. And that's News Briefs for this week.